States, Mr. McGrail.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I'm Dan McGrail. I represent the plaintiffs, Robert and Jolene Hall, in this matter. We're before the Court today requesting that this case be remanded for a trial because there are numerous genuine issues of material fact with respect to each of the issues. The genuine issues of fact relevant to the multiple claims are too voluminous to do in the time allotted, but I want to hit the central issue of material fact first. Robert Hall was arrested for insurance fraud. He was arrested for insurance fraud where there was no complaining victim. He was not prosecuted. The prosecution was initiated by the charging document of the police department. The state's attorney's office dismissed the charge early on in the proceedings.
So he wasn't prosecuted for anything?
No, he was. All charges were dismissed. There was no victim in this case that was complaining of insurance fraud. State Farm Insurance Company did not have any problem with the claim and, in fact, paid the claim in the normal course.
Well, that doesn't really matter to the existence of probable cause. What matters is what the officer knew about the claim, and what the officers knew about the claim was that it was based on golf clubs that he didn't own. It was a claim of stolen golf clubs, right? And the claim that he submitted to the insurer pertained to different golf clubs.
Mr. Hall, based on what his insurance agent told him and based on his policy, he submitted a quote from a golf store for comparable clubs. And that's what the insurance policy calls for, and that's what the statute allows. The only investigation into the purported value of the clubs by the police officers was the key material fact that's at issue. Because State Farm did not believe that they were defrauded, did not say that they believed the value that was submitted in the quote that was not reflective of the actual value of the clubs, or replacement value, which is what the contract called for, the only evidence the officers had was a purported telephone call to a local retail golf store where the...
Didn't his claim say that his ping, is that what his ping, had been, clubs had been stolen?
Yes.
He didn't own ping clubs, so that's a false claim.
It's not a false claim, Your Honor. A false claim to an insurance company under the statute is a claim that has false information in it.
Well, it sounds like false information if you say they stole my ping clubs and I never owned ping clubs.
No, the claim, I think what the confusion here is, Your Honor, that
what did it say on the application?
It wasn't an application. The insurance agent, the insurance company.
Whatever. What did he say?
It was a quote. He went to a retail golf store, got a quote for a comparable set of clubs as he was instructed to by his insurance company, and he submitted that quote.
Did he tell the insurance company what brand of his clubs, what brand of clubs had been stolen from him?
Yes, he did, and he told the insurance company that he could not obtain them.
What did he tell them? What did he tell them?
He told the insurance company that he had ping woods were stolen.
He didn't have pings, right?
Pardon?
He didn't have pings.
He did have pings.
Not Ping Zing 2.
Ping Zing 2 are a comparable golf club.
But not the ones that were stolen.
Because the insurance agent told him that pursuant to the insurance policy, if you cannot get the exact product, which happens all the time, a stereo gets stolen, you can't get the exact product. A golf club gets stolen, you can't get the same product as replacement value. The insurance contract and the statute allows for...
Right, but we're not talking about whether he could have been convicted of this crime. We're talking about whether there was probable cause to arrest him and what the officer knew at the time. Or I guess there were two officers. Right?
If you look at the
officers knew was that he submitted a claim for clubs that he didn't own and at an inflated value.
That is not what they knew, Your Honor. There's a genuine issue of material fact as to that. The charging document and the police report specifically state that Mr. Hall told them that he had Shapiro irons that were worth $1,100 and that they called a local golf store and determined that Shapiro irons were in fact valued at no more than $100. The problem is there's a genuine issue of material fact as to whether or not that telephone call to the golf store was ever made. There's affidavits in this case by the general manager and the purchasing director at the store, who the officer claims he talked to, saying that couldn't have happened. We've never heard of Shapiro irons, and we've never carried Shimano. There is this record, in a light most favorable to the plaintiff, demonstrates that the police officers never obtained a comparable value for the clubs that Mr. Hall reported stolen. In fact, the evolution of the facts in this case become utterly bizarre. In the police report and in the charging document, the officer says he called the local golf store, the Golf Shack, and found out that these Shapiro clubs were priced at no more than $100. Later on, months and months later, in the deposition in this case, the officer changes his story. He says, well, that's not really what happened. My police report's wrong, and the request for charge document's wrong. I really called that local retail golf store, and they had never heard of Shapiro clubs. And then he says, I asked the store representative, do you have any clubs that sounds like Shapiro? And he claims the store representative said, yeah, we have Shimano, and they're priced at less than $100 for a three-through pitching wedge. The genuine issue of material fact is that the record, in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, shows that that telephone conference never happened. Both Chip Block and Don Blecker from the golf store says that they could not have provided a quote for Shapiro or Shimano because they never carried either club. And to dig a deeper hole, this police officer said that when he worked at the Golf Shack for 3 months in a summer before becoming a police officer, he priced Shimano clubs. He basically worked out in the range, but one day he was in helping price, and he said he saw Shimano clubs, and they were priced at no more than $100. This is directly contradicted by the general manager of the store and the purchasing agent, who said that store has never carried Shimano irons. So in a light most favorable to the plaintiff, this entire investigation into the value of these clubs was fabricated. And that's the test in terms of summary judgment. And it goes even further into the ping-ping-zing issue that Your Honor alluded to. There's no evidence in this record that there's any distinction between the value of ping and ping-zing. And that's what you need to show in an insurance claim. And a person submitting an insurance claim does not have to find a price for the exact same property. That's why the contract and that's why the statute allows for comparable value. And there is not one shred of evidence in this record that there's anything to distinguish the price of pings and ping zings. That was something that was created in the defendant's brief during the case, and there's no evidence to support it. And unfortunately, the trial court alluded to it in the decision, but the trial court stated that it was based on the opinion of the officer as to the value of the clubs. There's nothing in this case regarding the officer's opinion. The officer was very specific that he determined the value of the clubs from his telephone conference with Golf Shack. And the very essence of that conversation, whether it even happened or not, is in dispute, let alone what happened, because of the varying stories the officer told and because it's contradicted by independent witnesses. And moving on to Jolene's case with respect to whether she was illegally detained, there were many, many facts that the defendant did not address in their argument. The totality of the facts are key in a case like this, as the court knows, under Mendenhall, the totality of the facts and whether a reasonable person would believe they were free to leave. With Jolene, it starts from being taken out of the police station under false pretenses. She was told it would be just a few minutes. She was told it was just for an update. It immediately turned confrontational. She's accused of criminal activity. She's accused of conspiring with her husband to either hide or steal these clubs. She's immediately read Miranda rights, which certainly in and of itself does not make it custodial, but in light of these other facts, it certainly does. After that, profanity is used. She's in a police department with uniformed police officers by herself. The doors leading outside are locked. There's repeated badgering. There's comments such as they're preparing warrants. They're looking at felony charges. She's not going to have a very Merry Christmas. She better be canceling her trip after Christmas. All of these things would lead any reasonable person to believe they weren't free to just get up and walk out of that police department. And in fact,
she wasn't taken down to the police department. She was called and asked to
She was called. And we have no problem with her being called, and that certainly her act of coming down was voluntary. Where the totality of the facts start turning is that she was called under false pretenses. She was called at 10:30. She got there at 10:40. She told the officer she had an appointment at 11. They said it'll be a few minutes. This update immediately turned into a confrontational accusatory session that, combined with all the other facts, would not lead a reasonable person to believe they could just get up and leave the police station. And when she, and even after she's done being interrogated, when they bring Robert down, they instruct her she can't talk to Robert. They instruct her she can't say anything to Robert. They put her into a dark room out in the lobby area. It's not until the very end, when she has to go knock on a locked door and to see what's going on, that the police officer then says she's not going to be arrested that day, but if we find any other evidence, she's going to be arrested. The totality of those factors need to go before a jury because in the light most favorable to the plaintiff, she was detained.
Okay, thank you, Mr. McGrail. Mr. Shelton?
May it please the court, Tim Shelton for the officers Bates and Williams, excuse me, in the village of Rockton. I think the For standard of review...
Well, why don't you try to clarify this question of what exactly was the claim submitted to the insurance company?
The claim submitted to the insurance company was for Ping Xing 2 clubs, both irons and woods, also other things, golf bag, gloves.
And why did the police think that he didn't own them?
Because he said he owned Ping Woods, which he valued at about $500, and that he owned some irons that were Shimano or Shapiro that were valued at $1,100. But when he submitted his, and that didn't check out, by the way, when they did their own investigation, Officer Bates knew personally, independently, which hasn't been mentioned yet, what the cost of those clubs were, separate from the phone call he made. But so they, and then when they submitted the clubs, they got reversed around so that the Ping Xings were worth $1,800, the Ping Xing 2s, which I think is evidence from the point of view of the officers and what they knew at the time of the arrest. This is evidence that there was an inflation, that these must be a higher value because suddenly they've gone from $500 to $1,800. Well, that's for both sets, I must say, the woods and the irons, but somehow we have inflated the value.
This set of facts isn't set out anywhere clearly. It's not in the district court's opinion. It's not in your brief.
Have I set it out a little clearer now or no?
Well, it's just surprising that it comes out for the first time in the oral argument. You said almost nothing about it in your brief. I'm just very confused about the just about these basic facts. Why did they think there was a fraud to begin with, right? He submits this to the insurance company. The insurance company doesn't complain. How did the police get into the act?
They got into the act when they were called to the house, to the home of the Halls,
and they tells them about the theft.
Yes,
right?
And tells them that they need this report from the police for insurance purposes. This, according to both officers, sent a red flag up. The hair on the back of their neck rose.
Well, why? I don't know.
Because they thought they had been called out to the house to try to catch a thief or return some golf clubs. They didn't know they'd been called out simply to help some people submit an insurance claim.
Well, but that's extremely common, right? I mean, goodness. If you're in an automobile accident, you have to get a police report before the insurance company will do anything for you, right?
Yes.
So why wouldn't it be the most natural thing in the world to report the theft to the police, even though you didn't have any serious expectation that they were going to find your golf clubs? You just wanted to make sure you got your insurance. So what's suspicious about
that? Well, there's a time lag of a month or so to between the, they didn't go to the police first. As I know, with a car, if I'm in a wreck, first thing I'm going to do is say to the other guy, let's don't move until we get the police here, because I know this. But they didn't do that. They discovered the loss of the clubs. They went to the insurance company, not to the police, and then they were told. That was just the beginning of a hint, I think, for the officers.
That's ridiculous, honestly. They went to the insurance company before they went to the police, and that's suspicious?
Well, it's a very small part of it, but the officers both testified that that...
I mean, no one actually expects to recover stolen property.
Is this a small community?
This is a very small community.
How big a community?
They had 10 or 12 officers. I don't know the size of the...
5,200 is the population of Rockton. The police force has 11 full-time.
Thank you.
So they discover a loss, and they don't report it to the police?
Yes.
Is that your understanding? They call the... they contact their insurer.
First, and we're told they needed a police report. And yes, this is...
And then when they
procedure.
Get a response from the insurance company that they need a police report, they don't go to the police. They call the police. Is that the situation?
Yes, which...
The police are annoyed that they have to go out. Is that what you're suggesting?
I'm suggesting that may have been in their mind. I don't know. But, I mean, they were called to their house. That the people didn't come down and say, listen, we've lost some clubs, or even call and say, what do we do?
So this is a residential burglary? Is this what
it was presented to the police?
So it's a residential burglary that is not reported for a month to the police department?
That's
your strongest argument about why
they're... On just this little part, yes. I believe that is on that part.
You argue that in your brief.
But that's not the... Well, we argued the suspicion, didn't we? That they found this slightly suspicious.
Your argument is basically that they gave different information to the police... Yeah. From what they'd given to the insurance company. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. And that they...
But the police seem to have gotten it garbled, right? This business about Shapiro, the non-existent club?
They got the name Shapiro Shimano garbled, not the worth of Shapiro Shimano.
He said to them, Ping Woods, is that right, plus Shapiro? Is that what they thought they heard?
That's what I recall, yes.
So that's what set them on their search.
Yeah.
They must not have much to do, this little police department, to get so excited over this.
Well, I think that...
Is this Rockton a big golf community or something? The worst thing you can do is misrepresent the value of a golf club or what?
I actually have never lived in Rockton. I don't know this. I don't want to make too many assumptions because, as you said, that gets into fact.
There was something in the briefs about a dispute between husband and wife about what they had paid for these clubs.
Yes.
It was part of the probable cause equation here?
This was another part of what the officers knew, and as I believe Judge Posner, you said, or your colleague Judge Easterbrook said, it's what the officers know, not whether they know the truth, that matters. And we have a lot of facts being presented later in depositions and affidavits that question the facts, although I think it's worth pointing out that the police chief and the state's attorney, according to the police chief, and this is undisputed in the depositions, both felt that this case was a good case, plenty of probable cause. They did not know why it had been dismissed, and they seriously considered refiling the charges based on the reports the police did. No further investigation.
What was the basis for the officer's knowledge of the value of the clubs? Was it his own personal experience? Was it the phone call to the golf shack?
Excuse me, yes.
Combination.
Bates himself was a golfer, so he had some experience. He worked at the golf shack.
So did he pick up immediately on the Shapiro Shimano distinction or problem?
The record doesn't say if he picked up on it immediately. He initially, counsel is correct, reported them as Shapiro. Later in a deposition said no, I've
the discrepancy between Ping Wing, Ping Xing, and Ping Wood. That's the critical thing, isn't it?
And I confess that the record does not contain...
Isn't that? And then what Judge Sachs mentioned also, that she remembered having written a check for only $400. Are those the two...
That's very key. Because she represented to the officers that the check was $1,700 when they first met. That's what they came away from that encounter. The value had been $1,700. How did you pay for it? With the check. That to them meant that check had been $1,700. They later, she said the check was for $4,500. They said, why did you say that? She said, I don't know. Why did you say that? I don't know. It's about three times. I don't know why I told you before it was worth more. So that...
Okay, since we're talking about her, I'm troubled by the question whether she was detained or the police. One of the things that bothers me is the fact that it was the weekend, which apparently is not a very busy time in the Rockland Police Department. So she's down there. I mean, ordinarily, if you go into a police department during the week, and I'm sure in Chicago on weekends, you know, a lot of people around. It's a busy place. It's a public building, and so on. But on the weekend here, you know, with the locked doors and so on, wouldn't she feel? And I thought your opponent made a good point. She's invited down. She comes down on the pretext that they're just going to, you know, talk to her for a few minutes so she can make her 11 o'clock appointment. Then it turns out, you know, the four policemen and so on, they start questioning her in an accusing fashion. Wouldn't a normal person think, you know, well, I'm stuck, you know, here I am all by myself in the police office, you know, weekend, just cops around. I'll have to stay until they release me.
I'm very simple.
Is the tribal issue?
I almost thought you said tribal. And the reason I thought that is I believe there is some sort of collective unconscious feeling we all have about law enforcement being in their presence. The problem is courts have developed objective criteria to measure whether somebody reasonably believes they can't leave. And that criteria does not include, it doesn't accommodate the subjective experience of the citizen. We have her rendition of what she felt happened, and we have to accept that as true. But we don't have to accept anything more in terms of material.
But couldn't a jury find that a reasonable person, you know, average person, not a super sensitive fraidy cat, would feel that she was not free to leave? She was detained.
I don't see how they could if they were properly instructed.
Do we have anything in the record about educational levels here?
It is, and probably counsel can address that better. I know their high school for sure was finished, and I think there is some college, a junior college, at least with both of them. The halls with Jolene.
Was he employed at this time?
Again, I believe so.
He's not a career criminal or anything, is he?
No.
He's had
some run-ins before, but not. I wouldn't call them career criminal run-ins.
With this police department?
He had a DUI, a couple. Whether that's I really don't want to misrepresent this, but I think he had. They didn't recognize him. They didn't know him. One of the officers knew of him.
Oh, so he had sort of a reputation.
Oh, he did have a little reputation, and that some of it is in the record. It's not in the briefs, but he had some reputation at the golf course, too, at the club. Mm-hmm. But I just think if a jury were instructed about what the criteria is, we all know, threatening presence, brandishing weapons, vocal commands that you can't leave,
touching weapons is a little extreme. I mean, most even arrests do not involve a display of weaponry.
I'm just saying what the United States, you know, Supreme Court and you have all established is there are certain standards. The police, we accept that it's not going to be comfortable, and we're all going to, I personally am very uncomfortable. when the red light goes on, flashing light behind me in the car, I go home. I won't say it. But I still try to, you know, whatever. The law just says, okay, that's a given. We all feel that way. Right, but they have to do something more. The officer has to do something, some behavior.
That's what it seemed to me, the fact that it was a weekend and the police station was kind of locked down.
I thought
it was a little different from the standard police station interview.
May I just address the lockdown quickly? The door she was brought in was never locked. She came in a door. She was placed in a room with that door was open. The hallway was open down to the door she came into. At the time she left, which she eventually left unhindered, she was taken to the lobby in the front and never tried the front door. She just sat there. And that front door may or may not, we don't know, but she did state she didn't try to see if she could have just gone out the front door of the police office from the inside. But the other doors, the passageway was open to the way she came in the whole time. I understand this from the subjective point of view of the citizen in the police department. This doesn't feel free to leave, but we have to apply some reasonable standard somehow. The courts have wrestled with this over the years to try to find some objective criteria and that we all have to live with in light of a police enforcement society.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Sheldon. Mr. McGrail?
Mr. McGrail, was this a residential burglary?
Yes, sir.
All right, so that I understand the facts. A residential burglary of approximately $1,800 in value, right?
Yes.
Okay. And how long after did they call the police?
It was never fully determined because Mr. Hall didn't realize the clubs were stolen until the next time he checked his garage to use those clubs.
I appreciate that. So from the time he believes he has a loss?
Approximately 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
And he had talked to his insurance company in the interim, and they said he needed to get a police
report. He needed to contact them. So he doesn't go to the police department in this small town, right? He calls out the police department to come out and report.
Yes.
Do you think that created any suspicion in the minds of the police officers who are about public safety that they should go to a residence to make that report? Or maybe that's routine. I don't know what the record shows here.
The record shows that's routine. The officers testified that had nothing to do with the basis for the arrest, which gets to the issue that I really want to hit on here, is that in the criminal complaint, in the police report, in the request for charge document, the officers make it very clear what their probable cause is for the arrest. Their probable cause was that Mr. Hall reported irons. It was limited to irons, that his irons that they said were Shapiro were worth...
I thought the problem was that he reported ping zings, and they were just... And then he told the police they were ping woods, and the officer, was this Bates or whatever?
Absolutely not the case, Your Honor. The defense in their response brief tried to glom onto that, but that was after the fact. That had absolutely nothing to do. If you look at the officer's depositions, you look at the 56 statement, you look at the charging documents, the differentiation between ping and ping zing was a non-issue. There is not one scintilla of evidence in the record that there's any difference in pricing between ping and ping zings. That is a red herring. All the charging documents, the police reports, everything shows that he was arrested because they say he reported Shapiro iron stolen and that he said were worth $1,100. Well, first of all, there's a factual issue there. The plaintiff has contended all along that he reported Shimano iron stolen, number one, genuine issue material fact. Number two, the plaintiff testified that his entire set, woods, clubs, putter, everything was worth $1,700. The plaintiff said he never broke it down. The $1,100 was something the officer came up on his own, another genuine issue material fact. But the key thing that is central to this case, and it's the only reason we're here before you, is because this man was arrested because these officers said that his Shapiro irons that he said were worth $1,100 were really only worth $100. And I submit to you that every fact relating to that issue is in dispute.
The insurance company about irons.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
What did he report to the insurance company about irons?
He reported to his insurance agent that he had Shimano irons stolen and that he could not obtain a quote for Shimano irons from the golf store. They said, get us a comparable value. He got a comparable value from the golf shack. He submitted the quote from the golf shack to the insurance company. The insurance company said, no problem. The officers, the reason I'm before you today is because the officers, based on this record, in a light most favorable to the plaintiff, manufactured evidence. And it might just be...
Is there a history, Mr. McGrail, of any sort reflected in the record between these, Mr. Hall and the police department?
One of the officers testified, and there was a dispute between the two officers. One of the officers testified on the way over there. He said that he knew Mr. Hall from the fact that he didn't have a license. The other officer denied that, which was another factual issue.
It's for what?
To drive. Other than that, there's...
So is your basic thought on this case, is you say why you're here, that they went there, they came with an attitude, and they're going to manufacture it because they think they've got a character on their hands. Is that
I think a jury could reasonably infer that. And the
is
reason
that you're going to argue?
I'm going to argue that.
To a jury that
absolutely.
Because they had a unfavorable view of him before they arrived at the doorstep, they were bound and determined to scrub this claim and find some inconsistency or some slight...
Yes, Your Honor. I'm definitely going to argue that to the jury. And one of the reasons I'm going to argue that to the jury is because they came out in mid-November and took this report from the Halls. They didn't do anything. They didn't do anything on this investigation until the day...
I still don't understand the irons thing. He told the insurance company that Shimano irons worth $1,100 had been stolen. And then, what is the evidence? Is there any evidence about the value of Shimano irons?
Key to the case right there, Your Honor. There is no evidence about Shimano irons. In fact, here's how...
Okay, we get the point. Okay, thank you very much. We'll have to move on.
Thank you, Your Honor. Appreciate it.
Thank you to both counsel.